Today we're going to speak about somebody, like I said, I don't think any of you heard of him. And I think it's one of the most, it's a fascinating perek in history of Klal Yisrael. First of all, where did I get my information from? The best contemporary place in terms of credibility and doing his work really well is a sefer called Meshichei HaShekev V'Misnagdehem. There's a fellow, Rabbi Yamin Hamburger, very chashev, a Talmud Chacham, a Yeki, who writes a lot of, he does a lot of historical research, mostly about Yekshim and Hagim, and he has a sefer called All About the Different Meshichei Sheker at Kemikal Yisrael and the History. And since this is connected to one of those histories, he really does a very, very good job in bringing the Mekoros together and making it, putting it together. Of the Sfarim that he took from that are reliable, in other words, old historical works, we're talking about the early 1500s, there's something called Shalshalas HaKabbalah. It's a sefer written by Rabbi Dalia ibn Yichi, and it's written about the same time pretty much. And he basically is trying to present the Messiah of Klal Yisrael. There's something called Seder Chachom Ekeres HaDeiros, and then there are specific works. There's Igeres Archos Olam that brings letters. We have contemporary letters of different people that speak about the events, and pretty much by cross-referencing it, you get a story that it seems to be correct and cross-referenced. And it's an incredible story for two or three reasons, and we'll see. Let's put the history in context. In 1492, the Jews were expelled from Spain. To stay in Spain, you have to convert and become a Christian, or you have to leave Spain. And the Anusim were the people who stayed and converted to Christianity on the surface, but remained or tried to remain Jews. In Portugal, it happened in 1496. And most of the Jews who remained moved on to either Turkey, which had just been conquered by the Muslims, by Ottoman Empire, or the Ottomans, I don't know if it was empire yet, or they went to Eretz Yisrael, and we spoke about the Beis Yosef and others in Eretz Yisrael. In the early 1520s, somebody appeared in Eretz Yisrael. This person looked different. He wore a very strange getup. He claimed he was from a Jewish kingdom of Aseres HaShvatim in a place called Chaber, the Midbar, the desert of Chaber. What Chaber exactly is? There are at least three places answer that name. It seems to have been taken from the description of where the Aseres HaShvatim went to. It's a pasuk in Tanakh where they went to Golos in Malachim. That Chaver is somewhere northeast of Iraq, kind of Kurdistan, near Kurdistan, Iran, that area, Central Asia. That's one, and that seemed to be probably why he picked on it. There's also a Chaber, or Chiber, which is in Mecca, near Mecca, in the Arabian desert, and there's a desert there called Chaber. But that's what he said he's from. It's Aseres HaShvatim. His name is David. His father's the king. Was the king Shlomo. He has a brother Yosef, who's the king there. And those Jews are sitting there very comfortably and looking to. They're not going to come back to Israel until 10 miracles have been performed. 8 have been performed already. He's done already the 9th miracle that was pulling a certain stone out of the Kaisel that was blocking the Gula. He did that. And what he needs now is a big army with a lot of guns and ammunition. He had heard that the Western people have these guns and these boats, and now he's out for that. He patched around at Israel, and I think a lot of people sort of took to him. And then he decided he's going to the Pope, and he wanted to get from the Pope letters of recommendation to the kings of Portugal, France, Germany. They should give him guns and munitions and stuff. So in 1524, he came to Italy. He came to Venice, and then he decided he's coming to Rome. And he seemed to have presence and seemed to have charisma, and the people in Rome took to him. One person especially was a big supporter of him, was Benvenida Barbanel. She was a daughter-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchak Barbanel. Rabbi Yitzchak Barbanel was one of those who left Spain with the expulsion, and she was a big hanger-on, and he gained a following. And the Pope, he got an audience by the Pope Clement the VII. You have to understand something. In those days, today we've just Googled David Ruveni. He called himself David of the Shevet Ruven, so David Ruveni. We'd Google it and we'd know already what he's wanted for what and where and, you know, and so on. They didn't have that luxury. And a guy comes in, he looks very mysterious. He presented himself as the king of the Jewish kingdom. And he spoke to the Pope and he said that he has a great idea for the Pope. He said they both hate the Muslims, and the Turks, the Ottomans, are really look like they're going to take over the world very soon. So he's come as an emissary of friendship to the Christian brethren, and all he needs is a few thousand cannons and guns and stuff like that from Portugal and France and other countries like that, and the Pope should write him that. They'll conquer the Muslims, and the Jews will just take out Israel, and the Christians can help themselves to everything else. That was his presentation. The Pope didn't quite know what to make of him, and on the one hand, he hadn't really heard of it before. On the other hand, you never know. And he gave him a letter to the King of Portugal, and the letter was, first of all, we now have the letter. This is one of the things now that we have archives that we can go to. The letter is basically very non-committal. It says, I heard from his translator this and this, they said this and this, he said this and this, and so on. And then he writes, and despite the fact that the despicable Jews are our enemies, one never knows God's plans. It could be he wants us to smite our enemies with our enemies. In other words, maybe it's the Jews that the use in the world is to kill the Muslims. So he gave him these letters, very non-committal, that he can go with it to the king to Portugal. The Portuguese emissary to Italy, to Rome, was not thrilled to have him come to Portugal. They were very scared that there were still plenty of Jews who wished they could be Jewish, and they wouldn't, and they don't, you know, and he didn't want anyone to rouse sleeping dogs. To have a Jewish king parade in and call himself a Mashiach of sorts was not good for the former Jewish population of Portugal. So he kept him waiting for a year till he finally gave him a visa. This person called himself David Ruveni. We know stuff about him. There's a book called Sefer David Ruveni, which is printed in different places. It seems to have been written by David Ruveni himself. And somebody did an extremely careful work on it, and somebody called Eshkoli, an academic scholar, and what seems to be is anything that he writes about himself after he came to Rome seems to be hold true via cross references. In other words, it more or less fits what we have from other sources. The stuff that he writes about where he comes from contradicts itself in a dozen places, and it seems to be quite unreliable. But the other stuff more or less seems to be reliable, and that's what we know about him. By his own admission and by other people's understanding, he was an Amoritz. He was not a very you know, his own shmiras hamitzvahs was wanting, seriously wanting in many places. It also, there was somebody, he was tevel a shifcha goya to marry one of his servants, and he had a tevel, and then he cut her nails and hair. I guess he forgot that you're supposed to do it before you go to the mikveh, and you know, it seemed to be not quite far from learned. But that was his personality, that was his character. It's not going to be the one that we're interested in, but still, so we have here a person who by all counts is not a Talmud Chacham, not a Tzaddik, not even clear if he's just not an outright charlatan. Coming to Portugal, this was in about 1524-1525. He comes to Portugal after about, I don't know, a year of waiting for his visa. The king greets him very suspiciously. He tells everyone in Portugal that all the Jews got very excited in Spain and Portugal, and he tells them that he didn't come yet for the Geula, but right now it's very important. He needs a lot of armaments, ammunition, guns. That seemed to be the only thing. He said he's mainly a military person, and just that he's looking for guns and stuff to chase out the Turks from Eretz Yisrael and so on. One of the king had a secretary. The secretary's name was Diego Perez, and he was a second generation Murano. In other words, his father had been forcibly converted, had converted so that not to be expelled, and he was brought up second generation. He still knew that he was Jewish. He was a man in his early 20s, and it did not appear that he had ever learned anything. Just he knew he was Jewish, and I guess something in him emotionally was still tuned into the fact that he's Jewish. So he was very, very taken by this David Reuveni. This was like the man of his dreams, a Jewish king coming to bring him back. And he tried to get close to him, and David Reuveni was not interested. He was very scared that if the king finds out that he's doing Kirov work, it's going to cost him his guns and his armaments and ammunition, and maybe it'll cost him his life also. So he told him, "B'shamayfim, he begged David Reuveni to give him a bris milah, and he told David Reuveni that he had a very powerful dream. That it will become a hallmark of this person's life, very strong dreams that seem to come true. And he told him he had this very, very powerful dream that he has to get a bris and so on. And David Reuveni basically chased him away. He said, "No way in the world." So he interpreted, and as he will during his entire life, that David Reuveni was like a super tzaddik was testing him, felt that he's too impure because he's an oral to even have a dream. So he went and did the next best thing, and he made himself a bris milah. And he writes, it was an intensely painful procedure. He bled terribly, but somehow he got healed a few days, and then he started having very powerful dreams. He felt that now he would get this tremendous Kabbalah's Panim by David Reuveni. He gave himself the bris, and he called himself Shlomo Molcho. Not clear where it got the name from, you know, why, but he now called himself Shlomo Molcho. He went excited to tell David Reuveni that he finally had a bris, and he has a name, and poor David Reuveni almost fainted and told him, "You're crazy, you've got to run away from here really quick." He had a dream that he needs to run away, and the truth was, if he would stay much longer, the king of Portugal would have killed him. I mean, the people make a mistake. The Inquisition was not against Jews. The Jews were just expelled. The Inquisition was against Jewish converts that was secretly practicing Judaism. That was the And he knew that his head would be aligned. It's true that he was the king's secretary, but if anything, made it worse. And he ran away. He ran off to Salonika in Greece. And in Salonika, he met one of the Gedolei HaDar. The person's name was the Marie Tetzak. A name that's not familiar today, unfortunately. Marie Tetzak was probably the Gedolei HaDar amongst the Sephardi Gedolim. He was a close Talmud and Chaver of the Beis Yosef, of the Marie Bei Rav, who was the Beis Yosef Rebbe. And almost all Sephardic Chachamim sort of deferred to Marie Tetzak. Marie Tetzak was the Gedolei HaDar in the Sephardic world. The Chida brings that as a Maseiris, that the choice of writing Shulchan Aruch was between three people: the Beis Yosef, the Marie Tetzak, and the Marie Bei Rav. I remember once it said that all three had a name Yosef, but to the best of my knowledge, Marie Bei Rav is Reb Yaakov, so I'm not sure quite. But like upon Marie Tetzak, the Chida brings, Sefer Chassidim brings about his Hasmada and his Hanhogas of Kedusha, incredible person. He went to learn by him. So here you have somebody in his 20s, second generation Christian, coming with almost no background, and they were astounded by the progress he made. He became a big Talmud Chacham and a big Mekubal, and the way contemporaries describe was like as if Shari Chachma had opened up. It was like he couldn't get enough. He eventually will see at the end there were halachas that they Paiskim relied on him. He wrote a sefer in Kabbalah called Sefer HaMefor, which we have. It's Kabbalah Dike in Yanim, a little bit of easier sort of Kabbalah on different parishes and so on, drushes. Also, there's a book written, a booklet called Chayas Kino. I'm not sure if he wrote it or they wrote from him about the dreams that he had. And some of the stuff, some of his biographical stuff is from there. And he spent 3-4 years there. And he became a very big Talmud Chacham, somebody that was highly regarded. And again, we know it from other contemporaries of the Dar. At this point, he decided to go to Eretz Yisrael. And at Eretz Yisrael, he went around to be Ma'arabim for Tshuva, that Mashiach is coming soon. I think he still felt that David Ravain is the Mashiach, but he went around to rouse people to get ready for the Gula. Yerushalayim had a gadol. The big Rav Yerushalayim was called the Maharal Bach, Rab Levi ben Chaviv. He was a son of the one who put together the Yaakov, and the Maharal Bach was, we have his Tshuvas. The Maharal Bach was what you would call today, I guess, in the political position that he occupied, he was the Haredi spoiler. As anybody came up with a good idea of how to bring Mashiach, he was the one who shot it down real quick. And he writes in his Maral Bach, and he has a big tshuva, and I'll tell you in a second what the tshuva is about. He writes, I feel I have two schusim in my life. One is when the crackpots came and started spending something about Mashiach. I knocked them down, and if he was deathly scared. He basically writes. He said people would have gotten all heated and riled up. The Turks would have found out. They would have killed everybody. He said if it's not for me, who spent so much time convincing people that it's not true and they're a bunch of shaitim and shagoyim, who knows? He said everything would have become charev and Yisrael. That's one thing he writes that he takes credit for. This is the second thing is even more fascinating thing, and maybe we'll speak about it at some point by Richos. The Rabbanim in Tzfas, we spoke about a little bit when we spoke about Beis Yosef, wanted to reinstitute Smicha, the Kol Gdei Olam, the Marie Bei Rav, and the Beis Yosef, and Shlomo Kavitz, the whole, everybody. And he was the one that was misnagged to it. And he came out against it. And his last tshuva, Kufam Zayin Amar Bach, is tons, reams and reams of pages against it with sharp lashonos, crazy sharp lashonos, and very, very sharp. I think that he also felt that it had messianic overtones to it. And he was very strongly felt that we're supposed to do the right things. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring Moshiach, he'll bring it. And any activities, whether he meant it on a practical level, that he's afraid of the Turkish government, or on a deeper level, that maybe there is some sort of, kind of kitrug, and you're not allowed to be doichik the kates, not sure which one. But at the end of a day, he fought both these things. And he writes, tastily two things. He doesn't write mefurish that it was Shlomo Malcho, but he writes very much the psuras hashoitim, he calls it. The fool's psura. And he says, if I hadn't stepped in and convinced and argued with people and got them out of it, they would have, who knows what would have happened. So Shlomo Malcho at this point, and there's also, there are some descriptions which are less than reliable, and I'll just say it over, because again, it's printed in different places, that one of them was Shlomo Malcho captured the Sultan, and he looked like a snake, and he had him almost conquered, and then he ran away from him. I take it with a lot of grains of salt, but the point is, there certainly seemed to be element of being Derech Sakeitz. He also, at this time, they asked him to put out his Chidushim, and that's when Sefer HaMefor, he wrote out, it's a Kabbalah Sefer, of Pshatim and Pirushim, a different Inyanim and Psukim, and so on. In 1529, he went to Rome. And somehow, I don't know, Rome seemed to be the attraction for all these people. And he said, like, Rome is the root of all evil. This is where he's going to have to have it out. He came to Rome, and there was a bridge over the Tiber River. I guess it was close to where the Pope was. And this is where all the wretches of Rome congregated. The poor, the sick, the lepers, and he dressed himself up as one of them, and he spent a month there. It's very possible he was trying to be Mekayim the Gemara about Mashiach sitting in Shari Reime like a Metzora. Very, very possible that was what he had in mind. At the end of 30 days, or at the end of that period of time, he had an extraordinary dream, which he describes in Chayas Kina. The dream was two catastrophes. And he asks the Malach what they are, and he says, in a year or in 2 years, there'll be a huge flood in Rome, and a year later, there'll be an earthquake in Portugal. And at this point, he felt that he had what he needed to present his credentials. He came to Rome. I don't know if he got into the Pope, but he sent a letter with these two predictions. And lo and behold, the predictions came true. And there was a terrible flood. He was out of Rome at the time. I think he went to Venice, and he was saved from the flood, and Rome was flooded. And also, a year after that, he wrote a letter to King of Portugal that in a year from that, an earthquake, and there was. Those two on record, that he was right, two for two. He asked the Pope for letters to the German Emperor, to Carlos, to Karl, and to the French Emperor, the French King, the King of Germany, King of France, to supply him armaments. The Pope wasn't in the mood for it. He did go. He did get into trouble, though. He was very friends with a chashav Talmud Chacham named Rabbi Yaakov Montiano. And this Talmud Chacham, he was a Talmud Chacham, he was a doctor. He got into a fight with someone else, Rabbi Yochalfan. He tried to get in between the two and to make shalom. Rabbi Yaakov Montiano became very upset with him, and he mastered him to the government. And they judged him that he has to be burnt at the stake. They burned him at the stake, but he was alive because they burned someone else instead. and he escaped. He ended up going to Germany, to King Karl, and he asked King Karl for armaments and stuff. King Karl was very, very suspicious, and he thought that he probably would take the armaments and use it against him. And instead, he imprisoned him, and he sent him off to Italy, this time to be burned for real. In Italy, they were done him, and they sentenced him to die at the fire. They were very scared of him because they felt that he has magical powers. So what they did was they taped his mouth shut. They put a bit in his mouth so they shouldn't be able to say any incantations. And right before they burned him, they offered him the opportunity, they loosened it, and they said, if you accept the Christian faith, you'll be saved. And he said, I waited so long to cast off this evil faith, and I would be glad to die for it. And he was burnt at stake. And from the datings of the documents, it's clear that it was Hanukkah time. I've seen in quite a few places Hey Tavis is listed as his yard site. I don't know where the Makor is. In other words, I don't know where the first place Hey, in the early documents, Hey Tavis is not listed, but just by the cheshbon of events, Hanukkah seems to be the right one. That's mentioned, you know, around Hanukkah time. But Al Kaponim, Hey Tavis seems to be listed in a whole bunch of places. A lot of times they just copy from each other, so I don't know if that. Besides the documents of people in his tkufa, I have three interesting things that are left of him. One is halacha. The Magen Avraham in Hilchos Tzitzis Simen Yud Aleph Sif Katan Chaf Beis, there's a question about how many spaces between the tzitzis are you supposed to have? How many between the knots? So he brings from the Tosfos Yontif. He brings a Lechem Chamudas, but I think the first marker is a Tosfos Yontif, who says, it's not Tosfos Yontif, it's Madani Melech on Hilchos Tzitzis. He says, it's interesting, they burnt him at stake. They had some of his stuff that were in a museum in Prague. They had a kittel of his, and they had his tzitzis. So the Magen Avraham brings the halacha, ubelechem chamudos simem ches kosav shebetzitzis of shloime malcho hoye ba'ave rishon yud kriches v'achakach hey, and so on. He had yud hey vav and a hey, you know, 10, 5, 6, and 5. That was what that's how many twirls they had between each one. So Shlomo Malcho is brought l'halacha. It's quoted in a whole bunch of poskim, the Yosuta, and so on. A halacha we have from him. They obviously felt that he was worthy of a Maaser Rav, that what he did seemed to be appropriate. One. A second place that he's given mention is Reb Chaim Vital, who was pretty much a contemporary. Reb Chaim Vital writes in Shaare Kedusha. Shaare Kedusha is a sefer about practical getting Ruach HaKodesh and so on. He writes very strongly against Kabbalah Maisis, against using Kabbalah for practical reasons. And he says a few reasons why. He says V'oid Acheres, he says that since we don't have the Paraduma, we're not Betara anymore, and therefore Toiv and Ra, everything has Tuma to it. The Efshalasik Toiv Levadoi, you can never get real Toiv, and it's always mixed up with Toiv and Ra together. Vezeo Soid Inyan Kabbalah Maisis, and that's the problem in Kabbalah Maisis. Velachain Osul Ishtamish Bob, you're not allowed to use it. You're going to have garbage mixed in with the good. You think that you're using this Kabbalah to retire yourself, but you make it filthy with the rat that's mixed in. It's like using a filthy bar of soap or a filthy sponge. Vigam afilu sheyasig hu achas emes b'tarov sheker. Even if you get emes, it's mixed with sheker. Befrat, he says, there's no efer para. Lachain, he says, shem nafshe yirchak mem. Anybody who's a shem nafshe should stay away from Kabbalah Mises. Kimulvat shemitame. Besides the fact of being mitame yourself, you're onish be gehenim, and you go to gehenim. The Afghan boilam haza, and even olam haza Kabbalah b'yadeinu, ki yoni hu ozaro or yechlozar, that you'll either become poor or sick. The kach rai says, I'll bring you proof. Mirab Yosef de Nirano, there was a famous mekubal that tried to bring Mashiach and so on. Mirab Shloime Molchoi, she istam shu be Kabbalah maisis, they use Kabbalah maisis, v'nevdu min ha'olam, and they died. V'cholzal siba niskaris. And so on. And he says another reason because they're Shia. And a final place we have a mention of him, an incredible mention. There's the Sefer Magid Mishorim we spoke about when we spoke about this Yosef. Magid Mishorim is a Sefer Beis Yosef wrote that has all the Giluyim that the Malach was Megala to him. So he says that Yochachma will spread out. Vishimcha Yisocher Bebatik Nasir Batik Nasir, they will mention you to Beis Yosef in all Batik Nasir Batik Nasir. Vichol Eis Cheskerucha Beis Hamedrish Yala Reach Aprik Teres Busmin. Every time they mention Beis Medrish, there will be a Reach like Teres. Upuk Chazi Madvikis Ulamai Tiske. Take a look what you're going to be Mizdabek and be Zeicha. Lekatsha Shmi Berabim. You'll be Zeicha to be Mekadish, my name Berabim. Kach Shleima Bechirai Zaka, the Iskari Malka. Just like Shlomo, the pure one, my favorite one, who was called Molcho, the Smashich Mimshach Rabbi Silo, that he had Shemen Mishchas Elyon. Vesolik lerav al mizbechi, and he was oyla lerotzam em mizbeach, vachinami testalik ata tenuach. You too will die like that also. He didn't die that like that, but he says that's one of the things that's very, very strange about it. But al kaponim, the Magid called Shlomo Malcho as the one who was oyla like a oyla mizbeach lerotzam. It's a incredible parasha. We have somebody who clearly was a charlatan and at best, or a crackpot at worst, David Ruveni, and he comes to Portugal, and somebody who comes from no place, a second generation Christian, second generation Marano, is turned on by him. This person has powerful chalomis. He in 4 years he becomes one of the chshuvei Klal Yisrael. I mean, he learned about God Lador, and there are all sorts of letters. There's a Rav in Italy, I think his name is Rosario Badania, I think his name was. Rav Israel Dina. He was in Italy, in Savionito. And he writes beautifully, in an extremely positive way, Rav Shlomo Molcho. And he writes horrible things of Dr. Ravani, that he was a faker and a charlatan and a good for nothing, so on and so forth. So here you have somebody who was clearly an Inchel Miley, coming and igniting a spark by someone who was so far away from Yiddishkeit, who in a few incredible years became chashev enough that he's quoted in Halacha, at least for one Maiserav, that he wrote Sfarim Kabbalah, that people were amazed at the Mayanus HaChachma, he had Chaloimis that were Emes. And that he's the fault that they find with him is he tried to push things too far too quickly, and the Magid calls him, the Beis Yosef held him as to be, you know, and the Beis Yosef's Magid called him to said that he's Shloime Bechirei Zaka, the Iskari Malchu, that there was Oil Lerotz al Mizbechi. It's an incredible piece of history. What are we supposed to make of it? Like, how could somebody who was totally garbage bring out such a nitzitz of Kedusha? What was the tachlis of it? You know, somebody coming, rising up like a star, and he was killed. It was a Reish Tzadik Beis. It was in either 31 or 32, depending on the year and when it came out. So he was 1531, 1532. He lived probably, he was in his early 30s, late 20s, early 30s when he died. I don't know. This is one of the things that are Hadi Kafsh Rahmana. But it's an incredible piece of history. And his yard site is, again, it's given Hey Tavis, but what's clear is it's definitely somewhere around Hanukkah time. So it's one of those things that someday we'll understand the Mafreya, what these things were, but Al Kapanim, it's there. Okay. You.